WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The debris in Central Texas won't be picked up until all the missing people have been accounted for. That according to officials who are still looking for victims for the 4th of July flooding. ABC's Matt Gutman is there with more.
Recovery teams in Kerrville are scouring riverbeds for a sixth day. At least 170 people still unaccounted for after that catastrophic July 4th flash flood killed at least 119 people. And just 20 miles downriver from here in Comfort, Texas, they have sirens and test them every day at noon.
Russia overnight launching more than 400 drones and missiles at Ukraine, some of them targeting the capital of Kyiv. Two-time Olympic champion runner Caster Semenya has won a partial victory at the European Court of Human Rights, which has ruled that she had her rights to a fair hearing violated at Switzerland's Supreme Court. Semenya has fought against track and field's sex eligibility rules for 7 years now. This is ABC News.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Actor Mark Ruffalo has taken shots at podcaster Joe Rogan, insinuating that Rogan is late to the game with his ICE raid outrage. The Kenosha-born Ruffalo said it's a little late now to pretend like Project 2025 didn't exist and wasn't the playbook all along, saying about Rogan, you are either not that smart or not that dumb. It's hard to tell at this point. Ruffalo has a host of projects set to drop in the coming months, and despite a solid performance as always, is still probably trying to forget he was part of Mickey 17. AMC Theaters recently announced they would play more commercials before movies to help offset a budget deficit. That's probably not something most moviegoers wanted to hear, but in a move in the other direction, beginning July 8th, the movie chain will offer 50% off tickets on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. The chain has also announced they will offer discount popcorn and soda on those days. This will allow the movie-going public to save a few bucks while still trying to add a few extra pounds. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers dominated the Dodgers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a night off after a dramatic 3-2 win over the Dodgers in extra innings, over 33,000 fans in the stands. Milwaukee with great pitching this week from Peralta, Mizorowski, and Jose Quintana to complete the sweep, manager Pat Murphy.
Quintana just stepped up. He wasn't going to be outdone by anyone. Gave us 6 innings, 2 hits or something like that. And the whole bullpen with McGill, Uribe, Koenig, Anderson, Mears, Ashby.
The Brewers closer, Trevor McGill, found out he's headed to the All-Star game next week. I asked Dodgers manager Dave Roberts what he thought the Brewers are doing best.
It's a team that play defense really well. Offensively, they just create havoc. They steal, they bunt, they hit and run, they don't strike out much. You know, there's going to be balls in play. Pat does a good job with the roster as far as trying to maximize and create offense, you know, with that ball club.
That's Dodgers manager Dave Roberts with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Trump is again trying to have it both ways on agricultural workers. He says they're working on, quote, a temporary pass where the farmer can have a little control as opposed to you walk in and take everybody away. He's describing feudalism, where the people who work the land are more under direct control of the land owners rather than the rule of law. He wants the vassals. He wants the lords. He wants the peasants.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, we'll talk to Sandra Goldshine of the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy about the real harm that's going to be done to families under this new federal budget.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag,
this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be partly to mostly cloudy today with a chance of scattered thunderstorms. Our high right around 85 this afternoon. Tonight, thunderstorms are possible with a low in the low to mid 80s. Tomorrow, scattered thunderstorms likely with a high in the upper 70s to low 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 65.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 p.m., I'll be joined by Republican State Representative Duke Tucker to talk about his recent legislation to institute term limits for all major elected offices in Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
A nasty little insect, a parasite, is making our headlines on a Thursday morning. Come on in, everybody. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke on the radio. This is the Midwest Farm Report, and this is an example of one of the stories we're sharing with you this morning. So yesterday, the U.S. Department of Agriculture decided to close ports of entry between the United States and Mexico. Nothing to do with people, but everything to do with a small insect, the New World Screwworm. They found it in Veracruz, Mexico, which is only about 370 miles from the U.S.-Mexico border. We need to keep that little rascal out if we want to protect our cattle industry, our horses, our bison. That is a deadly pest that the U.S. is ready to battle, but not quite yet. One of the stories we're bringing to you as we roll our way through the morning. Weather-wise, if you're headed out to county fair activities, not a bad day today. Looks like we're going to have about a 50% chance of rain overnight, but today should be a sunny day. Highs near 83. Those showers start developing probably after 3 o'clock today and into the overnight hours. Temperatures tonight down to 67. Friday, just a slight chance of showers, at least in the morning. Partly sunny otherwise, and 87. Then Saturday, another sliver of a chance of thunderstorms, possibly after 10 a.m. on Saturday. Otherwise, sunny and 82. Try to get a little bit better handle on that rain possibility because I know so many of you have outdoor plans on the horizon. Stu Mucker, ag meteorologist, will carry that message with us in about 15 minutes.
You're invited to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek for this year's Farm Technology Days, Generations of Progress. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment, innovative techniques, and taking a glimpse into the next generation of agriculture. There's also a rotary parlor, seminars, and, of course, field demos of all kinds. Mark your calendars for August 5th through the 7th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information and show details, visit wifarmtechdays.org. An 85-degree summer day with a sunny, cloudless sky is what I would use to describe the perfect day to go on the lake. But it's also what Cranberry Outreach Extension Specialist Allison John Jack describes as the ideal conditions for a cranberry plant. I'm Kylie Allen from the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, and Allison is here to tell us exactly how the cranberry crop is shaping up.
As we're moving in from late June into early July, we're seeing peak bloom and kind of moving on through the blossom into fruit set season. And we're seeing so far this year, surprisingly low insect pressure. We're also seeing a really good blossom set, but we are seeing weather conditions that aren't the pollinators' very favorite weather conditions. So we're hopeful that our pollinators are getting enough work done despite the uncooperative weather for them.
So I'm assuming that uncooperative weather you're talking about has been this influx of heat and rain. Is that a correct assumption?
Yes, that is true. Cranberries are typically pollinated either by native pollinators, by bumblebees, or by honeybees, and all three of those have a preference to work on the same days that humans would call a beautiful kind of partly cloudy day with light breeze or sunny with light breeze and not overwhelming in any direction. And the surprise thunderstorms and the high humidity are not our pollinators' favorite conditions.
So you also mentioned that there is a relatively low insect pressure right now. Why is that?
We are unable to say with certainty why there aren't so many insects other than possibly chalking it up to kind of similar weather. We're mostly cranberry growers are very attuned to what's going on in their beds, and they do, you know, weekly scouting. So we'll go out with, you know, looks like butterfly nets, but we'll go out and take sweeps and check for the presence of the Lepidoptera caterpillars that are the main pests for this time of year. And we'll count the caterpillars that are found in those nets, and We're just really pleased to see that there aren't very many this year to give us pressure. And it's really difficult to say. It's always, of course, 400 different factors that all play into that. But when we see low pressures, we say, well, thank goodness. And then we just keep monitoring and get to put our efforts elsewhere and other than into having to control those insects.
When you look at one cranberry plant's life cycle, when is maybe the most important time to have ideal weather?
That's a great question. And the answer is going to be different. If you were thinking in the 1850s or 1820s, when cranberries were just a wild plant here and weren't being commercially grown, but people would just show up to pick the crop in the end of the, you know, when they're ripe at the end of the season, then to have a good crop, you would hope to have a mild spring where there's not as many dips between hot weather and then cold nights and hot weather and cold nights after the plants had broken dormancy, because that spring frost is really able to do just a complete crop damage. Just in one night, you can lose an entire crop. But that was before we had growers to tend the marshes and before we had, the ability to flood or sprinkle to do frost protection. So now that we've got growers monitoring, every night of the spring is still critical and the grower has to wake up and do that frost protection. But now that we have control over that, the place where weather has the biggest impact on a given growing cycle is going to be during the, during the July, August fruit growth period. And when it's setting next year's bud, having a good amount of growing degree days, a good availability of sunlight and nutrients and the right amount of rain so that we're not too thirsty, but not waterlogged is going to be the place where weather is having the biggest impact, in this era.
So we're going into that July and August kind of time frame right now. Mm-hmm. What's the weather that you're hoping for?
We're going to hope, honestly, cranberries really kind of enjoy the same weather that humans enjoy. We would love to see not sweltering hot, but not too cold, just those nice 80s and 90s days with good sun availability. The plants love to photosynthesize in full sun. And so if you're having a nice day when you want to go to the lake, the cranberries are real happy as well.
Well, I didn't know that I had so much in common with a cranberry plant. So that's very interesting. Is there anything on the policy side that our cranberry producers are watching or anything that you've maybe got your eye on?
So that's one. My role in extension is to help keep a good tight feedback loop between cranberry research and cranberry growers. So I'm usually more focused on the agronomic side of the cranberry world. And for policy questions, it's probably better to ask maybe the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. I know that the growers do depend on having a good market to sell their fruit and depend on the people pretty much of the whole world to enjoy cranberries and want to drink cranberry juice and eat sweet and dried cranberries. Wisconsin is the number one producer of cranberries. And I think we've now celebrated our 20th year in a row of being the biggest cranberry producing state. So we're really supplying the world. So we love for the whole world to be able to enjoy cranberries.
Is there any thing you want to kind of give just an overview on what's going on in the research world?
Yeah, we are in peak research season. And so most of the researchers are out in the field pretty much every day, unless it's raining. We are doing, as usual, a bunch of screening trials for products to make sure that we've got the best, the best and safest products there. We're also doing a lot of work in heat stress lately. The last few years, we've had more heat and more humidity than has been typical for Wisconsin. So we're doing kind of stress tests at the research station over in Millston to say, okay, if it gets this hot and this humid, what's the plant's response? And can we do irrigation to relieve that heat? And if so, when's the best time? We've also been doing work on exploring new crossbred varieties. So breeding some of our native plants with some of the existing hybrids and seeing if we can get plants that are more disease resistant or other beneficial outcomes.
An 85 degree summer day with a sunny, cloudless sky is what I would use to describe the perfect day to go on the lake. But it's also what Cranberry Outreach Extension Specialist Allison John Jack describes as the ideal conditions for a cranberry plant. I'm Kylie Allen from the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, and Allison is here to tell us exactly how the cranberry crop is shaping up.
You know, higher yield or firmer berries to make good slices for the sweet.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as ag meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Time for the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. The Wisconsin Supreme Court hands a big win to the environment. The court ruled it's unconstitutional for a legislative committee to block rules created by state agencies. The decision means good environmental rules now face an easier path to getting to the finish line and becoming law. For years, legislative vetoes by a handful of legislators stymied a long list of environmental protections. After more than 30 years, the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program is going unfunded. Money for the legacy program was stripped out of the budget by the Joint Committee on Finance. The program helps preserve our state's wildlife areas and fisheries through land purchases and grants. Now that the budget has been signed, it's unclear how the vital program will continue, although there is talk of a standalone bill that would revive it. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, the Supreme Court says the Trump administration can fire as many federal workers as it wants. Jim Santel will join us to talk about that. Plus, Brittany Merlot and Weather and Wine.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Matinair on Air.
Ice Cream Trail. You know how we talk about if you travel Wisconsin, they'll give you a map of all the cheesemakers that are all around the state. If you're making, you know, maybe going up north for the family trip, stop it on the way. Or there's also, I believe there's also a map that helps you with Wisconsin meat processors. And now the Ice Cream Trail. That sounds like a fun way to try to win a badge. And you win even if you don't get a badge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I could probably tolerate that, you know, having to stop for ice cream a few times.
Don't you? Yeah, and you got, what is it, the Kelly girls that are just down the road from you?
Kelly's are right around the corner, yep.
That's a danger. Kelly girls and their ice cream. I said 49 different Wisconsin ice cream makers that we've got. So there's a lot of different options. We talked about Demo Derby yesterday. Cedar Crest working with Wisconsin 4-H. Demo Derby was the flavor the kids up in Portage came up with. What did they say? I just love the part where they put together two sauces like chocolate sauce and caramel. They said it was like the oils that are left behind after a demo derby. So they're trying to combine culinary experience with real life experience.
If you, imagination.
Yeah, there you go. If you've got a demo derby coming up for your county fair, a rodeo or anything like that, it's going to start getting a little tricky for track conditions, isn't it?
Yeah, we unfortunately are going to talk about rain edging on in, Pam. I mean, nothing right now. The weather radar indicating the activity all off to the west. North central Minnesota, southwest and south central Minnesota down into central Iowa. But there's a warm front trying to push our way. That warm front still back in Minnesota and Iowa. Connecting up to low pressure up in the New England state. So the front runs down through Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. So that warm front, that's going to push our way today. No, that rain that's not held together in Minnesota isn't going to hold together and march right into Wisconsin yet today. It'll probably fall apart somewhat, but there will be some chances far northwest and into western parts of the state here that we may see a little rain chance a bit later this afternoon, a scattered shower, maybe an isolated thunderstorm. Rain becoming a little more likely then overnight as the warm front itself moves in, and that rain chance then lasts into the day tomorrow. Yes, the warm front pulls through. We see those temps rise for Friday, but a cool front will swing right in behind that system. And that keeps around that rain chance again a little later Friday night, and lasting into the day Saturday. Boy, that sounds like a lot of rain. No, there will be breaks in it like today and tonight, and then again later Friday into Friday night. But unfortunately, I'd have to say with those two waves of precipitation, there's a pretty good chance into western Wisconsin, you know, northeast Iowa, southeast Minnesota, into western Wisconsin, right in that area, where rain amounts could push up to an inch or more. And for the rest of us, still, with the exception of maybe far northeast Wisconsin, we're talking rain amounts that will be adding up from tonight through Friday and into Saturday, and could very well add up into that 3/4 or even 1 inch range. So things are going to get more wet. That's maybe a downside for us. Certainly not great for haymaking or conditions for fairgrounds and the like, but that rain chance will be around to start us into the weekend. We dry it out later on Sunday and into early next week, and it stays warm, you know, getting back toward normal Sunday, but then above normal, mid and upper 80s next week, Monday, Tuesday. Kind of sounds like that summertime weather is going to be around here as we start pushing on toward the middle of the month of July. How did that get here that quick? I'll have our forecast details right after
family
this.
Family reunions, anniversaries, neighborhood get-togethers, whatever event you're planning, incorporate a little Bavaria sausage flavor in your event. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke, I wouldn't steer you wrong. I'll tell you what, Bavaria sausage can give you just what you're looking for when it comes to impressing your guests with fantastic flavor and old world recipes. And things are always changing at Bavaria Sausage, so you want to check back often. Their website's fantastic, BavariaSausage.com, making it easy for you to get the products you're looking for. Or better yet, visit face-to-face in the store, corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrota Road in Fitchburg. Monday through Friday, 9 until 7. Saturday, 9 until 1. No matter what your celebration is, Scott and the crew will work towards making sure it's a success. Looking for something special or maybe bigger volumes? That's where you want to contact Scott and Lisa and let them know what you're looking for. BavariaSausage.com. You stop by, they'll make the difference.
You can stop by their location tomorrow. Every Friday, rain or shine, they have a brat fry. That is the Wisconsin spirit, no matter what kind of weather you're going to concoct for us. But it sounds like rain gauge reporters can stand by to be busy, huh?
Yeah, as we get to the weekend, I think that's going to be a big deal. Let's look at today. We'll have some sunshine. It sounds great. Clouds build in from west to east, and that rain chance edging into western Wisconsin even by early afternoon, and then slowly slipping east through the afternoon. Today's temps ought to find their way at least up to 80 in the north and mid-80s in the south, and the south winds around that warm front only about 5. Tonight, mostly cloudy. There'll be that shower and thunderstorm development ending for a time from west to east. Nighttime lows in the upper 60s with the southeast winds at 5 to 10. Tomorrow, well, partly sunny skies. The cool front approaches. South winds still with us. Showers and a possible thunderstorm, especially later in the day Friday. But the rain chance developing later morning and spreading into the day. The high temp into the mid and upper 80s. Tomorrow, the warm day with those south winds about 5 to 10. And even Saturday, still some rain chance at least through the morning, early afternoon. Partly sunny, not quite so warm. Upper 70s in the north, low 80s south, Pam. And then some sunshine and that almost normal weather for Sunday sounds great. But rain amounts, yeah, could be adding up to an inch, maybe heavier in central, west central Wisconsin.
All right. Well, we'll get the rainfall reporters on guard and ready to go. Thanks, Stu. We'll catch up with you tomorrow.
You bet. Have a great day.
Stu Mocker, ag meteorologist, with the weather details you're looking for. Like I said, that tech talk text line is always open to you, but if we're going to get that weather, you really need to note the number 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. Call it or text it.
This is the
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, where Maggie sat down with economist Benga Agyilor, talking about what the impacts will be to rural health care with the current budget bill working its way through Washington.
Tell us what's at stake, what's currently baked into the budget reconciliation bill that will directly impact our rural communities and the health care that they can access when it comes to this $880 million in Medicaid cuts that's slated to occur.
What's happening with Medicaid, and the reason why this is such a big deal, is that they're cutting, you know, as you said, it's a massive amount, probably the biggest cut that we've seen in over 40 years, $880 billion. But the way that they're doing the cut is by adding work requirements and other administrative burdens to basically kick people off of Medicaid. If you're not, you know, if you don't have health insurance, then you're not, quote unquote, you know, spending money on health, then that's going to, you know, cause the quote unquote savings. And so the issue here is that insurance is important to help out with the hospitals. As the impact of these rural hospitals, that their financial viability, a lot of time is based on Medicaid. And so I'll just throw out a few stats. So first of all, nearly half of all births in rural areas are financed by Medicaid. 47% of children are covered by Medicaid. And, you know, one of the reasons why is that when people are using healthcare and they don't have insurance, the hospital still has to take care of them because that's what they do. And so you have all these uncompensated care costs. And just as a comparison, in states that expanded Medicaid, 3% of uncompensated care costs are for hospitals in states that expanded Medicaid. In states that did not expand Medicaid, it's over 7%. And so you see that now with this cutting the $880 billion and, you know, up to upwards of almost 14 million people becoming uninsured, that's going to have dire impacts for rural hospitals.
So if a woman is having a baby, what is particularly risky about this scale of cuts to Medicaid is that as we move forward, if these cuts are adopted, it will be less likely that that woman will enter a hospital during childbirth with Medicaid. And if she doesn't have Medicaid and doesn't otherwise have health insurance, the hospital, of course, still has to care for her.
You've been listening to a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, which airs across the Civic Media Radio Network weekdays from 4 to 6 p.m. Find the full broadcast lineup at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The debris in Central Texas won't be picked up until all of the missing people have been accounted for. That according to officials who are still looking for victims for the 4th of July flooding. ABC's Matt Gutman is there with more.
Recovery teams in Kerrville are scouring riverbeds for a sixth day. At least 170 people still unaccounted for after that catastrophic July 4th flash flood killed at least 119 people. And just 20 miles downriver from here in Comfort, Texas, they have sirens and test them every day at noon.
Russia overnight launching more than 400 drones and missiles at Ukraine, some of them targeting the capital of Kyiv. Two-time Olympic champion runner Caster Semenya has won a partial victory at the European Court of Human Rights, which has ruled that she had her rights to a fair hearing violated at Switzerland's Supreme Court. Semenya has fought against track and field's sex eligibility rules for 7 years now. This is ABC News.
The Brewers dominated the Dodgers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a night off after a dramatic 3-2 win over the Dodgers in extra innings, over 33,000 fans in the stands. Milwaukee with great pitching this week from Peralta, Mizorowski, and Jose Quintana. To complete the sweep, manager Pat Murphy.
Quintana just stepped up. He wasn't going to be outdone by anyone. Gave us 6 innings, 2 hits or something like that. And the whole bullpen with McGill, Uribe, Koenig, Anderson, Mears, Ashby.
The Brewers closer, Trevor McGill, found out he's headed to the All-Star game next week. I asked Dodgers manager Dave Roberts what he thought the Brewers are doing best.
It's a team that play defense really well. Offensively, they just create havoc. They steal, they bunt, they hit and run, they don't strike out much. You know, there's going to be balls in play. Pat does a good job with the roster as far as trying to maximize and create offense, you know, with that ball club.
That's Dodgers manager Dave Roberts with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Green Bay's own Frank Hermans into the studio to discuss his new show at the Meyer Theater. Then Madison film critic Rob Thomas joins the show to talk movies, TV, and Madison.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be partly to mostly cloudy today with a chance of scattered thunderstorms. Our high right around 85 this afternoon. Tonight, thunderstorms are possible with a low in the low to mid 80s. Tomorrow, scattered thunderstorms likely with a high in the upper 70s to low 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 65.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The big Brewer bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right in the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a conversation from a recent episode of the Busted Pencils podcast, talking about how AI or artificial intelligence is being utilized in rural classrooms.
I mean, really, I think it was reading so many of these books, like educational, like more theory-based books. It's like we gotta put theory into action. So it was kind of like a happen chance where we stumbled across, you know, Khan Academy with their Khanmigo, like their AI tutor bot. There's a lot more like technology sources, like embedding AI into them. So we started to look at what would be the capabilities of a classroom if we let some of the tier one instruction be turned over to AI. So where students are actually receiving learning. I mean, as adults, if I want to learn how to change a faucet, I go and watch a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. Kids, this generation of kids, they want to learn via technology. They want to learn via videos. I think it was just like this perfect storm of like students being disengaged. You know, I was an instructional coach and associate principal. I've sat through my fair share of lessons that I, as the adult, was bored. So it's like all these problems of practice that we were trying to like find a way to solve. And it's like, well, we have something right in our hands. And so what would it look like if we could turn over some of that tier one instruction to a tutor bot or to personalized learning via an online platform and let the teachers do the depth of knowledge and challenge-based learning and really bringing in those real world connections.
Tell us, rural Wisconsin. So this is happening then in rural Wisconsin.
It's happening. I mean, we have schools that are, I mean, we started off as like a little pilot, and now it's like, I feel like every day it's like, what's going on? Like, what is going on? And in this idea of rethinking or rebuilding like public education, I think each district that we work with kind of faces their own problem of practice. We have a district that couldn't really hire a physics teacher. So they, how can they take a teacher that has no physics background and use AI to truly help teach the kids? We have districts who are like, you know what? No, we're going to teach math, science, ELA, all the content. We're going to teach that, and we're going to reduce that time down so the kids get it all.
You've been listening to a portion of the Busted Pencils podcast. To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to our website, civicmedia.us/shows.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
He needs to get on your plan.
Did you know that the Lodi Agricultural Fair in Lodi is one of the oldest fairs we've got in Wisconsin? It's underway now. It actually started back in 1866, their very first fair that was held, and some of the classes they focused in on: blooded horses, matched horses, horses for work, mules, and jacks. They had Durham cattle, swine, merino sheep, and poultry. That was kind of the list of animals that were on hand for the Lodi Agricultural Fair, which is going on now. Same general location in Lodi. We're talking more county fair activity in just a moment. Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Report. I am Farm Director Pam Yonke. Tickled to have you with us on this, the 10th day of July. Let's see, what can I tell you? On this day back in 1913, Death Valley in Nevada experienced the highest temperature ever recorded on Earth. They hit 134 degrees. Now, they say that there have been perhaps other hotter spots, but this is the one that's been verified. 1913, 134 degrees in Death Valley. And now you know why they call it Death Valley. On this day in 1923, a fellow was born in Anago, Wisconsin, that would turn out to catch a lot of notoriety. Didn't want it, would have preferred not to. His name was John Bradley, and he was one of the men in the famous picture of the flag raising on Iwo Jima. He joined the 28th Marines of the 5th Marine Division in 1944, and that was basically his first and only campaign. John Bradley in Anago was the longest surviving member of that memorialized group. He died in 1994. Just a little Wisconsin tidbit for you. Happy birthdays today to Sophia Verga. She is 53. Jessica Simpson turns 45 today, and now you know. Well, we want you to know county fair activities are so rewarding in so many different ways. It's not just about the kids and the families. It's also about your personal experience at the county fair. We've got Kewaunee County Fair in Luxembourg going on this week. We have the Sauk County Fair, where I'll see you Saturday in Baraboo. We have the Northern Wisconsin State Fair in Chippewa Falls, Lafayette County Fair in Darlington, and the Jefferson County Fair in Jefferson going on. Stephanie Hoff gives us a reason to visit that one.
There's no place like fair. That's the theme for the Jefferson County Fair, July 9th through the 13th. And this year, the entertainment will focus on families, exhibitors, and supporting the community. Program manager Abby Chopin says attendance is projected to be higher even without a grandstand headliner. She says thousands of animals are coming to the fair this week. The grounds had to borrow pens from other fairs because otherwise they'd be bursting at the seams.
So our numbers are up this year. We have exploded in our draft horse department. I think we've quadrupled our normal numbers for draft horse. We had to rearrange some barns to make it all work. We also have open dairy this year. So open meaning adults can show dairy this year, which is new. I don't know that that's been done in the last 20 years or if ever. So that's exciting. And then we have more events for kiddos this year, the littles. So we've really beefed up our kids zone. So we have things like the corn pit. We have a circus sideshow. We have Dorothy and friends coming from Oz. We have Agrigolf, which is new this year. pig and duck races. We have all kinds of stuff for the kiddos to do.
I've even noticed some of the traditional windows for entertainment outside of the beer tent are also geared toward families.
Right. And in fact, we're trying something completely new this year. Two things that are completely, completely new. We have a community stage this year. So we're featuring local dance troupes, local choirs, local theater groups, local musicians that are going to be on our community stage, which is not the beer tent stage. So this is different. It's in the heart of the park, right in the center. We have everything from line dancing to choirs. And then another new thing that we're trying out this year is in our grandstand, we're going to have music in the afternoon. We have a Taylor Swift tribute band coming in on Saturday afternoon. So to try to capture some of the kids that might be showing and they have a lull in between their shows and their showmanship so they can go out and enjoy the fair.
Catering to the youth exhibitors.
Yeah, right. Because that's honestly, that's what the fair is all about. It's not the beer tent. It's not the tractor pulls, right? I mean, that stuff is super fun and we're happy to offer it, but it's about the kids and their exhibiting and making the experience awesome for them.
There is still this heightened interest from all ages for the county fair staples, like those draft horses, like the demo derbies, and now two nights of the rodeo.
So last year we did a rodeo for the first time and it was so popular. We learned very quickly we needed to move. So we're moving the rodeo into our draft horse arena and we have bleachers coming in. So we're able to offer more seating. We're able to offer a 360 view and then we're stretching it out to two nights. So hopefully that'll be crazy this year.
Program Manager Abby Chopin inviting you to the Jefferson County Fair July 9th through the 13th. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
You're invited to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek for this year's Farm Technology Days, Generations of Progress. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment, innovative techniques, and taking a glimpse into the next generation of agriculture. There's also a rotary parlor, seminars, and of course, field demos of all kinds. Mark your calendars for August 5th through the 7th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information and show details, visit wifarmtechdays.org.
Katie Burgess from EverAg is joining us live in just a couple minutes here on the Midwest Farm Report. The dairy complex yesterday was a little bit mixed as far as the product prices, and it looks like it's a little bit mixed again this morning. I think the excessive heat that we picked up last week, not just in Wisconsin, but in many dairy regions, could be part of the reason why we're seeing this trend in dairy prices. We'll find out what Katie has to say about that. Hang around. That's up in about 10 minutes. I am Pam Yonke. So let's talk a little bit about the markets. Yesterday in Chicago, the barrel cheese was unchanged. 40-pound block cheese was up a quarter at 169.5, while AA butter finished 5.5 cents lower, 256.25. The August class 3 milk that goes into cheese is up 6 this morning at 1798. The September milk closed a penny lower, 1855, 100 weight. Grain market's a little lackluster. We do have a World Ag Supply Demand Report coming from USDA. That's going to be out 11 a.m. tomorrow morning. The September corn this morning is down 2. December new crop down 2 at 413. August soybeans right now are down about a nickel with November new crop unchanged at 1007. The wheat for September, that's 2 cents lower at 545. December down 2. $5.65 a bushel. So let's talk a little bit more about the getting together that county fairs allow. It's not just county fairs. We're also looking forward to seeing you at the Wisconsin State Fair. Midwest Farm Report, very proud to partner with the Wisconsin State Fair to share many of the stories of the century and sesquicentennial celebrants that we'll focus on the final Tuesday of State Fair. It is all about recognizing Wisconsin's history on the farms and homes that dot our state. And one of those celebrating 150 years in the same family is the Marquardt family. Actually, it was the great-great-grandparents of Melanie Marquardt, Wright and Betty Massey, that came to the United States from England. She explains it took a lot of effort just to get to their Iowa County location.
My great-great-grandparents, Wright and Betty Massey, came to America from England. And they made it to Galena and walked to Mineral Point, which was roughly about 42 miles. When they got to Mineral Point, they got snowed in and had to remain there until the spring. They acquired one of the last homesteads in Moscow Township in Iowa County. And they arrived at the homestead and they built a rustic log home in a valley that ran downhill and was sheltered There was a spring at the bottom of the homestead, and Wright was a well digger and a stonemason by trade. The log home is no longer there, but we are going to find the foundation and mark it for future reference.
Very cool story. Thank you to Melanie Markhart. She is the great-granddaughter of Wright and Betty Massey that went to the Iowa County location more than 150 years ago. What's the farm doing today? Well, she explains.
After my parents sold the cows in 1997, my dad had beef cattle there and pastured, then gained some horses. As of 2024, no animals were remaining there. And that's when my husband and I and our sons, who also farm, fenced in the pastures. So now there's beef cattle there. Did some corral work in a shed. We do anticipate putting up another shelter for the beef cattle to remain there.
Those are the stories we love to tell. Thank you to Melanie Markhart from the Markhart family and the Mosseys for sharing that sesquicentennial farm story out of Iowa County. We're continuing to gather those stories. If you're one of the families that's going to be recognized and haven't shared your story with us yet, we'd love to hear from you. Use our talk text line, for example, 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. We'd love to schedule an interview to share your farm story for everyone that is interested. And I hope everybody is. Hope you're interested in the markets. Katie Burgess from EverAg is next.
Can't get enough farm news? The stories you hear and more 24/7 at MidwestFarmReport.com. Stay tuned as we'll be right back.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Shayna Broussard became the chair of the Federal Election Commission July 1st. Problem is, her bipartisan commission, hapless in the best of times, will still be paralyzed. The agency is supposed to have 6 members, but has only 3, so no enforcement can take place. Broussard, a Democrat, was nominated by President Donald Trump in his first term and confirmed by the Senate in December 2020. Broussard served as a counsel in the FEC beginning in 2008. Broussard takes the reins of an agency unable to do its job. Resignations of commissioners in January and April and Trump's firing of Chair Ellen Weintraub in February left only 3 members and no quorum to enforce election and campaign finance rules. The commission frequently deadlocks along its 3 Democrat and 3 Republican party lines. Only in egregious cases of corruption, such as Congressman George Santos, is a bipartisan recommendation for prosecution typically made. The FEC can continue to require campaign finance reporting, receive complaints, investigate, and make recommendations. It just can't enforce anything. Why, you may ask, has a Democrat become chair of the Trump administration's FEC? Because it's unlikely Trump will nominate an additional 3 members, keeping the FEC powerless to referee the upcoming midterms. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The big Brewer bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right in the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time for the Northern Wisconsin State Fair. Pat Kreitlow is along. We'll also talk to Rusty Volk, the fair director, and Eric Anderson of the U.S. Coob Championship.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
For her smiling face on a Thursday morning, Katie Burgess, one of the dairy analysts with EverAg, joining us live here on the Midwest Farm Report. I just remind you, ever.ag is the website that gives you all the resources that that team has to offer you. Katie, let's start off right away with some data that you've been following and bringing to us on the Midwest Farm Report. Although our day-to-day prices in Chicago might not be impressive, boy, the export scene for U.S. cheese has stayed pretty bright, hasn't it?
That's for sure. In May, we just got new data last week from May that showed May cheese exports were an all-time record high. So we sold a lot of cheese. Mexico, our biggest customer, they were still our biggest customer, and they actually took a little bit less. But we were able to sell more cheese to places like South Korea and Japan. We sold a bit more to different places in Latin and Central America. And so all in all, you know, by finding some new customers for that cheese, we were able to get the volumes up even when Mexico, our biggest customer, took a little bit less.
Katie Burgess joining us live on the Midwest Farm Report again, ever.ag, their website. Now, Katie, we've heard from the Trump administration that they are looking at elongating tariffs and escalating tariffs against South Korea, Japan. That's not a good sign for dairy that's just getting hot in that area.
That's for sure. I mean, earlier this week when President Trump said, hey, we're going to give everyone to August 1st to figure out trade deals. If we don't get them figured out by then, tariffs will be coming on imports from South Korea and from Japan. The dairy industry definitely took notice about that because, of course, you know, the question then is if we end up in a spot where we put tariffs on South Korea and Japan, do they retaliate against us? And they are historically our number two and number three biggest customers for exported cheese. So I think that's one thing that everyone in the dairy industry needs to be watching pretty closely is, in particular, what happens with trade deals with those two countries.
Oh, absolutely. It's nice to see the volume of movement, but we got to keep it going because even though we've seen some heat in the Midwest, Katie, it's probably with technologies today on the average dairy farm, it's probably not going to hurt us, ding us too bad as far as production, do you think?
Yeah, that's for sure. When we've been talking to dairy producers here in Wisconsin, kind of all the way from South Dakota into Michigan, it does sound like the heat there in late June did knock back output a bit. Even guys who talk about, oh, we've really invested in heat abatement technology, still saw a little bit of an impact given how hot and humid it was for a stretch there. But, I mean, the forecast here in southern Wisconsin looks pretty good from a temperature perspective over the next week or so. So I think the cows, we're hearing they are starting to bounce back a little bit. So from a milk production perspective, the heat definitely knocked it back quite a bit. We're off the bottom, still not back to where we were a few weeks ago. But, you know, that's one thing we always watch in the summer is, on one hand, it always gets hot out, so you kind of expect some of this, but you never know when it's going to happen. And it can cause some volatility in our dairy market.
Again, Katie Burgess joining us live on the Midwest Farm Report, one of the smiling faces we find at ever.ag, giving you all kinds of risk management direction if you are looking. So, Katie, let's talk just a little bit more about, now we've got a World Ag Supply Demand Report that will come out tomorrow. Most of that is generally focused on the grain side of things, maybe a little bit on the proteins, but also dairy. With the changing dynamics on the international marketplace, how are the stockpiles of U.S. cheese or butter or anything like that looking? Just to kind to give us temper our enthusiasm or caution on those announcements. Are you there?
Yes. I mean, milk production, you know, weather events notwithstanding, the stockpiles, we're making more product here in the U.S., which means that we probably have plenty around. I think from a price perspective, we're really going to need those exports in order to keep the market as strong or to provide some of those spikes in the marketplace. But overall, U.S. dairy supply is growing. Domestic demand for dairy is only so-so, which is why those international markets are so important.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Do we have any late numbers about where consumers are buying, Katie? I know that last week, I think when I talked to Cody, we were a little concerned that dining out has taken a real ding. And of course, that in turn can impact cheese.
Yeah, that's right. The new data, as we got kind of the final June data, restaurant demand, not great. Also, it seemed like sales at grocery stores were down a little bit as well, too. So we're just in an environment right now where we're not seeing any channel in particular really knock it out of the park in terms of dairy sales. It's okay, but it's not great.
That's so much of agriculture summed up right there. Again, Katie Burgess joining us live from ever.ag. You know, one thing I want to focus a little bit on, Katie, is expansion. We've been talking from time to time about dairy expansion, new plants going in. Are things still red hot in the Northeast with this kind of economic climate?
Yeah, we have a couple big plants growing in the Northeast, a Fairlife plant. Later this year, Chobani invested some big amount of money for expansion in the future there too. So I do expect that we're going to see milk production grow in spots like that. I know dairy producers that I talked to in New York are really excited about the new investment in the dairy processing industry in their state. Elsewhere, we have had new cheese plants open up in Texas, Kansas here over the past 6 months, some expansions elsewhere that we are continuing to see dairy producers look to expand milk production, especially around those new plants.
Makes perfect sense. Thank you, Katie, for breaking it down for us, sweetheart. I appreciate the content, the information, and the partnership. Katie Burgess joining us live on the Midwest Farm Report. She's a part of the EverAg team. Find them online, ever.ag. I'll find you tomorrow.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. The Todd Albaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people that voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app.
One vision of the future impact of ag technology. Today on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health Campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. The advent of artificial intelligence has created a climate of both hope and fear in the ag community. Aaron Yoder is with the Central State Center for Agricultural Safety and Health.
Figuring out how to use the technology and how to help it, give us some time off because we're using it, but using it efficiently. I know enough from using ChatGPT that computers aren't going to take over the world. They're not going to replace us anytime soon. But what Nebraska is using as a marketing slogan for their AI classes is AI won't replace you, but somebody that knows how to use it will.
Says Yoder, humans will still be needed.
The interpretation of information that we get, automated systems aren't real good at that. So we still need people and our thinking skills to help manage those automated or those new technology type systems.
Yoder says AI is still pretty new, so it'll take some getting used to, some adjustment as it evolves.
Once we get beyond the learning curve of the technology, it can make our jobs easier and we can figure out how to use it to reduce those stress levels, but it takes some time for that. It's like when we still had to set our parents' VCR time that was flashing on noon or whatever.
I guess humans will still be needed for the foreseeable future, if nothing else, to provide non-artificial intelligence. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, we'll talk to Sandra Goldschein of the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy about the real harm that's going to be done to families under this new federal budget.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The big Buro bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right in the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Teams of people actively combing through debris on the ground of Kerr County, Texas, looking for bodies in the aftermath of the flooding. ABC's Jacqueline Lee is there.
The sheer amount of destruction, all of these trees just toppled over like toothpicks because the water movement was so powerful. And they're actually already starting to clean all of this up because that we're working, trying to get all of these trees out of here. Still so much more work to be done, and there's still more than 160 people still missing here in Kerr County.
Death toll from the flooding, at least 120 people. As the Senate works on possible sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine, Secretary of State Marco Rubio meeting now with Sergei Lavrov, Russia's foreign secretary in Malaysia. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, meantime,